It's like they just don't want to be followed around. Though some people get taken with them, and that's a bit disturbing. And then the rooms. Well, all the ones they can get into, they're a mess. Every drawer pulled out, shelves searched, carpet upturned. Lots of things get broken. You wouldn't believe the number of cameras I've replaced over the years.
Cameras?
Oh, he said bashfully. I like photography. But despite all that, they don't end up taking much. Father thinks my idea is rubbish, of course. What could a bunch of illiterate barbarians be looking for? Still, I think there must be something. It was intriguing. If I was penniless and knew how to break into the palace, I think I'd take every piece of jewelry I could find, anything I could sell. These rebels must have something in mind beyond a mere political statement, or their day-to-day survival in mind when they came here.
Do you think it's silly?
Maxon asked, bringing me out of my wonderings. No, not silly. Confusing, but not silly. We shared a small smile. I realized that if Maxon had simply been Maxon Shreve and not Maxon Future King of Ilia, he would be the kind of person I would have wanted to be my next-door neighbor, someone to talk to. He cleared his throat.
I suppose I should finish my rounds.
Yes, I imagine there are quite a few ladies wondering what's taking you so long.
So, buddy, any suggestions as to whom I should speak with next?
I smiled and looked behind me to make sure my candidate for princess was still holding it together. She was. See the blonde girl over there in the pink? That's Marley. Sweetheart, very kind. Loves movies. Go. Maxon chuckled and walked in her direction. The time in the dining hall felt like an eternity, but the attack had only lasted a little over an hour. We found out later that no one had actually gotten inside the palace, just inside the grounds. The guards didn't shoot at the rebels until they tried for the main doors, which accounted for the bricks. Bricks that had been gouged out of the palace walls, and rotten food being thrown at the windows for so long. In the end, two men got too close to the doors, shots were fired, and they all fled. If Maxon's labels were correct, I would assume these were northerners. They kept us tucked away for a little while longer, searching the perimeter of the palace. When everything was as it should be, we were released to our rooms. I walked arm in arm with Marley. Despite holding it together downstairs, the strain of the attack had exhausted me, and I was glad to have someone to distract me from it.
He let you have the pants anyway?
She asked. I had started talking about Maxon as soon as I could, eager to know how their conversation had gone.
Yeah, he was very generous about it all. I think it's charming that he's a good winner.
He is a good winner. He's even gracious when he's gotten the raw end of things. Like a knee to the royal jewels, for example.
What do you mean?
Nothing. I didn't want to explain that one. What did you two talk about today?
Well, he asked me if I'd like to see him this week.
She blushed.
Marley, that's great.
Hush, she said, looking around, though the rest of the girls had already ascended the stairs.
I'm trying not to get my hopes up.
We were quiet for a minute before she burst.
Who am I kidding? I'm so excited I can barely stand it. I hope he won't take too long to call on me.
If he's already asked, I'm sure he'll follow through soon. I mean, after he finishes running the country for the day, that is. She laughed.
I can't believe this. I mean, I knew he was handsome, but I wasn't sure how he'd behave. I was worried he'd be, I don't know, stuffy or something.
Me too. But he's actually... What was Maxon actually? He was sort of stuffy, but not in a way that was as off-putting as I'd imagined. Undeniably a prince, but still so... So... normal. Marley wasn't looking at me anymore. She'd lost herself in a daydream as we walked. I hoped that this image of Maxon that she was building was one he could deliver, and that she would be the kind of girl he wanted. I left her at her door with a small wave and went on to my room. My thoughts of Marley and Maxon flew out of my head as soon as I opened the door. Anne and Mary were crouched around a very distressed Lucy. Her face was red with tears falling down her cheeks. Her usual tiny trembles were full-on shakes, racking her entire body. Calm down now, Lucy. Everything's fine, Anne was whispering as she stroked Lucy's messy hair. Everything is over now. No one was hurt. You're safe, dear, Mary cooed, holding a twitching hand. I was too shocked to speak. This moment was Lucy's private struggle, not meant for my eyes. I went to back out of my room, but Lucy caught me before I could back away.
Sorry, lady, 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 she stammered.
The others looked up with anxious expressions. Don't trouble yourself. Are you all right? I asked, closing the door so no one else would see. Lucy tried to start again but couldn't form the words. Her tears and the shaking were overwhelming her little body.
She'll be fine, miss, Anne interceded. It takes a few hours, but she calms down once everything's quiet. If it stays bad, we can take her to the hospital wing.
Anne dropped her voice.
Only Lucy doesn't want that. If they think you're unfit, they hide you down in the laundry rooms or the kitchen. Lucy likes being a maid.
I didn't know who Anne thought she was hiding her voice from. We were all surrounding Lucy, and she could hear those words clearly, even in her state.
Please, miss. I don't,
she tried. Hush, no one's turning you in, I told her. I looked to Anne and Mary. Help me get her on the bed. With the three of us, it should have been easy, but Lucy was writhing so that her arms and legs would slip from our hands. It took quite a bit of effort to get her settled. Once we tucked her under the covers, the comfort of the bed seemed to do more than our words could. Lucy's shudders became slower, and she stared vacantly at the canopy above the bed. Mary sat on the edge of the bed and started humming a tune, reminding me all too much of the way I would baby May when she was sick. I pulled Anne into a corner, far away from Lucy's ears.
What happened? Did someone get through? I asked.
I would expect to be told if that were the case.
No, no, Anne assured me. Lucy always gets like this when the rebels come. Just talking about them will send her into a crying fit.
Anne looked down to her polished black shoes, trying to decide if she should tell me something. I didn't want to pry into Lucy's life, but I did want to understand. She took a deep breath and started. Some of us were born here. Mary was born in the castle, and her parents are still here. I was an orphan, taken in because the palace needed staff. She straightened her dress, as if she could rub off this piece of her history that seemed to bother her. Lucy was sold to the palace.
Sold? How can that be? There aren't slaves here.
Not technically, no, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Lucy's family needed money for an operation for her mother. They gave their services over to a family of threes in exchange for the money. Her mother never got better. They never made their way out of the debt, so Lucy and her father had been living with this family for ages. From what I understand, it wasn't much better than living in a barn with the way they were kept. The son had taken a liking to Lucy. And I know sometimes it doesn't matter what caste you're in, but 6 to 3 is quite a jump. When his mother discovered his intentions for Lucy, she sold her and her father to the palace. I remember when she came, cried for days. They must have been terribly in love. I looked over at Lucy. At least in my case, one of us got to make the decision. She had no choice when it came to losing the man she loved. Lucy's dad works in the stables. He's not very fast or strong, but he's incredibly dedicated. And Lucy is a maid. I know it might seem silly to you, but it's an honor to be a maid in the palace. We are the front line. We are the ones deemed fit enough and smart enough and attractive enough to be seen by anyone who comes to call. We take our position seriously, and with reason. If you screw up, you're put in the kitchen, where your fingers are working all day, and the clothes are baggy. Or you chop firewood or rake the grounds. It's no small thing to be a maid. I felt stupid. In my mind, they were all sixes. But there were rankings even within that, statuses that I didn't understand. 2 years ago, there was an attack on the palace in the middle of the night. They got the guards' uniforms, and everyone was confused. It was such disarray, no one knew who to attack or defend, and people slipped through holes in the lines. It was terrifying.
I shuddered just thinking about it. The dark, the confusion, the wide expanse of the palace. Compared to this morning, it sounded like the work of Southerners. One of the rebels got a hold of Lucy. Anne ducked her eyes for a moment. She spoke her next lines quietly. I'm not sure they have very many women with them, if you catch my meaning.
Oh.
I didn't see this myself, but Lucy told me that this man was covered in grime. She said he kept licking her face. Anne cringed away from the thought. My stomach heaved, threatening to bring up my breakfast. It was positively revolting, and I could see how someone who'd already been as scarred as Lucy would break under that kind of attack. He was dragging her off somewhere and she was screaming as loud as she could, but in the commotion it was hard to hear her cries. But another guard came around the corner, a real one. He took aim and fired a bullet right through the man's head. The rebel fell to the ground, pinning Lucy. She was covered in blood. I covered my mouth. I couldn't imagine delicate little Lucy going through all that. No wonder she reacted this way. She was treated for some cuts, but no one ever really saw to her mind. She's a little jittery now, but tries to hide it as best she can. And it's not just for her sake, but for her father's. He's so proud that his daughter is good enough to be a maid. She doesn't want to let him down. We try to keep her calm, but every time the rebels come, she thinks it's going to be worse. Someone's going to take her this time, hurt her, kill her. She's trying, miss, but I'm not sure how much more of this she can stand. I nodded, looking over to Lucy in the bed. She had closed her eyes and fallen asleep, even though it was still quite early. I spent the rest of the day reading. Anne and Mary cleaned things that weren't dirty. We all stayed quiet while Lucy recovered. I promised myself that if I could help it, Lucy wouldn't have to go through that again. Chapter 14. As I predicted, the girls who had asked to go home changed their minds once everything had settled down. None of us knew exactly who had wanted out, but there were some, Celeste in particular, who were determined to find out. For the time being, we remained at 27 girls. The attack was so inconsequential, according to the king, that it barely warranted notice. However, since camera crews had been making their way in that morning, some of it was aired live. Apparently, the king wasn't pleased about that. It made me wonder just how many attacks the palace suffered through that we never heard about. Was it far less safe here than I'd thought? Sylvia explained that if the attack had been much worse, we would have all been able to call our families and tell them we were safe. As it was, we were instructed to write letters home instead. I wrote that I was well, and that the attack probably seemed worse than it was, and that the king had us all kept safely tucked away. I urged them not to worry about me, and told them that I missed them, and handed the letter off to a helpful maid. The day after the attack passed without incident. I had planned on going down to the women's room to talk up Maxon to the others, but after seeing Lucy so shaken, I chose to keep to my room. I didn't know what my three maids busied themselves with while I was away, but when I was in the room, they played card games with me and let pieces of gossip slip into the conversation. I learned that for every dozen people I saw in the palace, there were 100 or more behind them. The cooks and laundresses I knew about, but there were also people whose sole job was to keep the windows clean. It took a solid week for the team to get them all done, by the end of which, the dust would find its way past the palace walls and cling to the clean glass, and they'd have to be washed all over again. There were also jewelers hidden away, making pieces for the family and gifts for visitors, and teams of seamstresses and buyers, keeping the royal family, and now us, immaculately clothed. I learned other things, too. The guards they thought were the cutest, and the horrid new design of a dress the head maid was making the staff wear for the holiday parties. How some of the palace were taking bets on which selected girl might win, and that I was in the top 10 picks. A baby of one of the cooks was sick beyond hope, which made Anne tear up a bit. This girl happened to be a close friend of hers, and the couple had been waiting so long for a child. Listening to them and joining in when I had something worth saying, I couldn't imagine anything more entertaining happening downstairs, and was glad to have such company. The mood in my room was a quiet and happy one. The day had been so nice, I stayed up there the day after as well. This time we kept the doors open to both the hallway and the balcony, and the warm air filtered in and wrapped itself around us. It seemed to do particularly wonderful things for Lucy, and I wondered how often she actually got to step outside. Anne made a comment about how this was all inappropriate, me sitting with them, playing games with the doors open, but let it drop almost immediately. She was quickly getting over trying to make me the lady it seemed I ought to be. We were in the middle of a game of cards when I noticed a figure out of the corner of my eye. It was Maxon, standing at the open door looking amused. As our eyes met, I could see that his expression was clearly asking what in the world I was doing. I stood smiling and walked over to him. "Oh, sweet Lord," Anne muttered as she realized the prince was at the door. She immediately swept the cards into a sewing basket and stood. Mary and Lucy followed suit.
"Ladies?" Maxon said.
"Your Majesty," she said with a curtsy. "Such an honor, sir."
"For me as well," he answered with a smile.
The maids looked back and forth to one another, flattered. We were all silent for a moment, not quite sure what to do. Mary suddenly piped up. "We were just leaving."
"Yes, that's right," Lucy added. "We were, just..."
She looked to Anne for help. "Going to finish Lady America's dress for Friday," Anne concluded.
"That's right," Mary said. "Only 2 days left."
They slowly circled us to get out of the room, huge smiles plastered on their faces.
"Wouldn't want to keep you from your work," Maxon said,
following them with his eyes, completely fascinated by their behavior. Once in the hall, they gave awkwardly mistimed curtsies and walked away at a feverish pace. Immediately after they rounded the corner, Lucy's giggles echoed down the corridor, followed by Anne's intense hushing.
"Quite a group you have,"
Maxon said, walking into my room, surveying the space.
"They keep me on my toes," I answered with a smile.
"It's clear they have affection for you. That's hard to find."
He stopped looking at my room and faced me.
"This isn't what I imagined your room would look like."
I raised an arm and let it fall. "It's not really my room, is it? It belongs to you, and I just happen to be borrowing it." He made a face.
"Surely they told you that changes could be made. A new bed, different paint?"
I shrugged. "A coat of paint wouldn't make this mine. Girls like me don't live in houses with marble floors," I joked. Maxon smiled.
"What does your room at home look like?"
What did you come for exactly?" I hedged.
"Oh, I had an idea."
"About?"
"Well,"
he started, continuing to walk around the room.
"I thought that since you and I don't have the typical relationship that I have with the other girls, maybe we should have alternative means of communication."
He stopped in front of my mirror and looked at the pictures of my family.
"Your little sister looks just like you," he said,
amused by this observation. I walked deeper into my room.
"We get that a lot. What was that about alternative communication?"
Maxon finished up with the pictures and moved toward the piano in the back.
"Since you are supposed to be helping me, being my friend and all," he continued with a pointed look at me, "perhaps we shouldn't be relying on the traditional notes sent through maids and formal invitations for dates. I was thinking something a little less ceremonial."
He picked up the sheet music on top of the piano.
"Did you bring these?"
"No, those were here. Anything I really want to play I can do from memory." His eyebrows rose.
"Impressive."
He moved back in my direction without finishing his explanation. "Could you please stop poking around and complete an entire thought?" Maxon sighed.
"Fine. What I was thinking was that you and I could have a sign or something, some way of communicating that we need to speak to each other, that no one else would catch on to. Perhaps rubbing our noses?"
Maxon ran a finger back and forth just above his lips. "That looks like your nose is stopped up. Not attractive." He gave me a slightly perplexed look and nodded.
"Very well, perhaps we could simply run our fingers through our hair?"
I shook my head almost immediately. My hair is almost always pulled up with pins. It's nearly impossible to get my fingers through it. Besides, what if you happened to be wearing your crown? You'd knock it off your head. He shook a thoughtful finger at me.
Excellent point.
He passed me, continuing to think, and stopped near the table by my bed.
What about tugging your ear?
I considered. I like it. Simple enough to hide, but not so common we could mistake it for something else.
Ear tugging it is.
Maxon's attention was fixated on something, but he turned to smile at me.
I'm glad you approve. The next time you want to see me, simply tug your ear, and I'll come as soon as I'm able. Probably after dinner, he concluded with a shrug.
Before I could ask about me coming to him, Maxon strolled across the room with my jar in his hand.
What in the world is this about?
I sighed. That, I'm afraid, is beyond explanation. Friday arrived, and with that came our debut on the Ilya Capital Report. It was something that was required of us, but at least this week all we had to do was sit there. With the time difference, we'd go on at 5, sit through the hour, and then go off to dinner. Anne, Mary, and Lucy took extra care in dressing me. The gown was a deep blue, hovering near purple. It was fitted through my hips and fanned out in satiny smooth waves behind me. I couldn't believe I was touching something so beautiful. Button after button was fastened up my back, and my maids put pins bedecked with pearls in my hair. They added tiny pearl earrings and a necklace made of wire so thin and pearls so far apart, they looked like they floated on my skin, and I was done. I looked in the mirror. I still looked like me. I was the prettiest version of myself I'd seen so far, but I knew that face. Ever since my name had been drawn, I'd feared I would become something unrecognizable, covered in layers of makeup, and so hung down with jewelry that I'd have to dig out of it for weeks to find myself again. So far, I was still America, and exactly like myself, I found that I was covered in a sheen of sweat as I walked down to the room where they recorded messages at the palace. They'd told us to be there 10 minutes early. 10 minutes meant 15 to me. It meant more like 3 to someone like Celeste. So the arrival of the girls was staggered. Hordes of people were swarming around, putting the last touches on the set, which now held rows of tiered seating for the selected. The council members who I recognized from years of watching the report were there, reading over their scripts and adjusting their ties. The selected crowd were checking themselves in mirrors and tugging at their extravagant dresses. It was a flurry of activity. I turned and caught the briefest of moments in Maxon's life. His mother, the beautiful Queen Amberlee, pushed some stray hairs back into place. He straightened his jacket and said something to her. She gave a reassuring nod, and Maxon smiled. I would have watched a little longer, but Sylvia, in all her glory, came to escort me into place.
"Just head over to the risers, Lady America," she said. "You may sit anywhere you like. So you know, most of the girls have already claimed the front row."
She looked sorry for me, as if she were delivering bad news.
"Oh, thank you,"
I said, and went happily to take a seat in the back. I didn't like climbing the little steps with a snug dress and such strappy shoes. Were the shoes really necessary? No one was even going to see my feet. But I managed. When I saw Marley come in, she smiled and waved, and came to sit right next to me. It meant a great deal to me that she chose a place beside me, as opposed to a spot in the second row. She was faithful. She'd make a great queen. Her dress was a brilliant yellow. With her blonde hair and sun-kissed skin, she looked like she was radiating light into the room.
"Marley, I love that dress. You look fantastic."
"Oh, thank you." She blushed. "I thought it might be a bit too much."
"Not at all. Trust me, it's perfect on you."
"I've wanted to speak to you, but you've been missing. Do you think we could talk tomorrow?" she asked in a whisper.
"Of course. In the women's room, right? It's Saturday," I said in a matched tone.
"Okay," she answered excitedly. Just in front of us, Amy turned around. "I feel like my pins are falling out. Can you guys check them?" Without a word, Marley put her slim fingers in the curls of Amy's hair and checked for loose pins. That feel better? Amy sighed. Yes, thank you. America, is there lipstick on my teeth? Zoe asked. I turned to my left and found her smiling maniacally, exposing all her pearly whites. No, you're good, I answered, seeing out of the corner of my eye that Marley was nodding in confirmation. Thanks. How is he so calm? Zoe asked, pointing over at Maxon, who was talking to a member of the crew. She then bent down and put her head between her legs and started doing controlled breathing. Marley and I looked at each other, eyes wide with amusement, and tried not to laugh. It was hard if we looked at Zoe, so we surveyed the room and chatted about what others were wearing. There were several girls in seductive reds and lively greens, but no one else in blue. Olivia had gone so far as to wear orange. I'd admit that I didn't know that much about fashion, but Marley and I both agreed that someone should have intervened on her behalf. The color made her skin look kind of green. 2 minutes before the cameras turned on, we realized it wasn't the dress making her look green. Olivia vomited into the closest trash can, very loudly, and collapsed on the floor. Sylvia swooped in, and a fuss was made to wipe the sweat off her and get her into a seat. She was placed in the back row with a small receptacle at her feet, just in case. Barrio was in the seat in front of her. I couldn't hear what she muttered to the poor girl from where I was, but it looked like Barrio was prepared to injure Olivia should she have another episode near her. I guess that Maxon had seen or heard some of the commotion, and I looked over to see if he was having any sort of reaction to it all, but he wasn't looking toward the disturbance. He was looking at me. Quickly, so quickly it would look like nothing but scratching an itch to anyone else, Maxon reached up and tugged on his ear. I repeated the action back, and we both turned away. I was excited to know that tonight, after dinner, Maxon would be stopping by my room. Suddenly, the anthem music was playing, and I could see the national emblem on tiny screens around the room. I shifted to sit up straighter. All I could think was that my family was going to see me tonight, and I wanted them to be proud. King Clarkson was at the podium, speaking about the brief and unsuccessful attack on the palace. I wouldn't have called it unsuccessful. It managed to scare the daylights out of most of us. Announcement after announcement came, and I tried to be aware of everything they said, but it was hard. I was used to watching this on a comfy couch with bowls of popcorn and family commentary. Many of the announcements tied in to the rebels, placing blame for certain things on their shoulders. The roads being built in Sumner were behind schedule because of the rebels, and the number of local officers in Atlin was down because they'd been sent to help with a rebel-caused disturbance in St. George. I had no idea either of those things had happened. Between everything I'd heard and seen growing up, and what I'd learned since coming to the palace, I began to wonder just how much we knew about the rebels. Maybe I just didn't understand, but I didn't think they could be blamed for everything that was wrong with Ilya. And then, as if he had appeared out of thin air, Gavril was walking on set after being introduced by the Master of Events.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, I have a special announcement. The selection has been going for a week now, and 8 ladies have already gone home, leaving 27 beautiful women for Prince Maxon to choose from. Next week, by hook or by crook, the majority of the Ilya Capital Report will be dedicated to getting to know these amazing young women.
I felt the little beads of sweat pooling on my temple. Sit here and look nice. I could do that. But answer questions? I knew I wasn't going to win this little game. That wasn't the issue. I just really, really didn't want to look like a moron in front of the entire country.
Before we get to the ladies, tonight, let's take a moment with the man of the hour. How are you tonight, Prince Maxon?
Gavril said, walking across the stage. Maxon had been ambushed. He didn't have a microphone or prepared answers. Just before Gavril's microphone reached Maxon's face, I caught his eye and gave him a wink. That tiny action was enough to make him smile.
I am very well, Gavril, thank you. Are you enjoying your company so far? Yes, it's been a pleasure getting to know these ladies. Are they all the sweet, gentle ladies they appear to be?
Gavril asked. Before Maxon replied, the answer brought a smile to my face, because I knew that it was yes, sort of.
Maxon
looked past Gavril at me. Almost.
Almost?
Gavril asked, surprised. He turned to us.
Is someone over there being naughty?
Mercifully, all the girls let out light giggles, so I blended in. The little traitor.
What exactly did these girls do that isn't so sweet?
Gavril asked Maxon.
Oh, well, let me tell you.
Maxon crossed his legs and got very comfortable in his chair. It was probably the most relaxed I'd ever seen him, sitting there poking fun at me. I liked this side of him. I wished it would come out more often.
One of them had the nerve to yell at me rather forcefully the first time we met. I was given a very severe scolding.
Above Maxon's head, the king and queen exchanged a glance. It seemed they were hearing this story for the first time, too. Beside me, the girls were looking at one another, confused. I didn't get it until Marley said something. I don't remember anyone yelling at him in the great room, do you? Maxon seemed to have forgotten that our first meeting was meant to be a secret. I think he's talking it up to make it funnier. I did say some serious things to him. I think he might mean me.
A scolding, you say? Whatever for?
Gavril continued.
Honestly, I wasn't really sure. I think it was a bout of homesickness, which is why I forgave her, of course.
Maxon was loose and easy now, talking to Gavril as if he were the only person in the room. I'd have to tell him later how wonderful he did.
So she's still with us, then?
Gavril looked over at the collection of girls, grinning widely, and then returned to face his prince.
Oh, yes, she's still here,
Maxon said, not letting his eyes wander from Gavril's face.
And I plan on keeping her here for quite a while.
Chapter 15. Dinner was disappointing. Next week I'd have to tell my maids to leave some room in the dress for me to eat. In my room, Anne, Mary, and Lucy waited to help me out of my gown, but I explained that I'd need to stay in it a little bit longer. Anne figured it out first, that Maxon was coming to see me, because I was always eager to get out of the binding clothes. Would you like us to stay later tonight? It's no problem, Mary said, just a little too hopefully. After the calamity of Maxon visiting earlier this week, I decided sending them out as early as possible was the best way to go. Besides, I couldn't bear to have them watching me until he showed up. No, I'm fine. If I have a problem with the dress later, I'll ring. They reluctantly backed out the door and left me to wait for Maxon. I didn't know how long he'd be, and I didn't want to start a book and have to stop or sit down at the piano only to hop right back up. I ended up just lounging on the bed waiting. I let my mind wander. I thought of Marley and her kindness. I realized that, besides a few small details, I knew very little about her. Still, I trusted that her actions toward me were in no way fake. And then I thought of the girls who were all too fake. I wondered if Maxon could tell the difference. It seemed like Maxon's experience with women was so great and so small at once. He was gentlemanly enough, but when he got too close, he came undone. It was like he knew how to treat a lady, he just didn't know how to treat a date. It was quite a contrast to Aspen. Aspen. His name, his face, his memory hit me so quickly, it was hard to process. Aspen. What was he doing now? It was getting close to curfew in Carolina. He'd still be at work if he had a job today. Or maybe out with Brenna, or whoever else he'd decided to start spending his time with since we broke up. Part of me ached to know. Part of me wanted to crumble just thinking about it. I looked over to my jar. I picked it up and felt the penny slide around, so lonely. Me too, I whispered. Me too. Was it stupid of me to keep this? I'd given back everything else, so why save one little penny? Would this be all I had left? A penny in a jar to show my daughter one day? To tell her about my first boyfriend, the one no one knew about? I didn't have time to dwell on my worries. Maxon's firm knock came only minutes later. I found myself running to the door. I drew it open in a big sweep, and Maxon looked surprised to see me.
Where in the world are your maids?
He asked, surveying my room. Gone.
I send them off when I come back from dinner.
Every day?
Yes, of course. I can take my clothes off by myself, thank you.
Maxon raised his eyebrows and smiled. I blushed. I hadn't meant it to come out like that.
Grab a wrap. It's chilly out.
We walked down the hall. I was still a little distracted by my thoughts, and I knew by now that Maxon wasn't great with starting conversations. I had looped my hand around his arm almost immediately, though. I was glad that there was a sort of familiarity there.
If you insist on not keeping your maids around, I'm going to have to post a guard outside your door, he said.
No, I don't like being babysat.
He chuckled. He'd be outside. He wouldn't even know he was there.
I would too, I complained. I'd sense his presence.
Maxon made a playfully exhausted sigh. I was so busy arguing, I didn't hear the whispers until they were practically in front of us. Celeste, Emeka, and Tiny were heading past us toward their rooms.
Ladies,
Maxon said, and gave a small head nod. I suppose it was foolish to think no one would see us together. I felt my face heat up, but I wasn't sure why. The girls all curtsied and carried on their way. I looked over my shoulder at them as we went toward the stairs. Emeka and Tiny looked curious. Within minutes, they would be telling others about this. I would be cornered tomorrow for sure. Celeste was staring daggers at me. I was sure she thought I had personally wronged her. I turned away and said the first thing that came to mind. I told you the girls who got nervous about the attack would end up staying. I didn't know exactly who had asked to leave, but rumors pointed to Tiny as being one. She had fainted. Someone else had said Bariel, but I knew that was a lie. You'd have to pry the crown out of her cold, dead hands first.
You can't imagine what a relief that was.
He sounded sincere. It took me a moment to think of how to respond, as that wasn't quite what I was expecting, and I was very focused on not falling. I didn't know how to take steps down very well while holding on to someone else. The heels didn't help. At least if I slipped, he would grab me. I would have thought it would be helpful in a way, I said, as we made it to the first floor and I found my footing again. I mean, it has to be complicated to pick one person out of all these girls. If the circumstances weeded some out for you, shouldn't that make it easier?
Maxon shrugged. I suppose it should. But it didn't feel that way at all, I assure you.
He looked hurt.
Good evening, sirs.
He greeted the guards who opened the doors to the garden without the slightest hesitation. Maybe I would have to take Maxon up on that offer to have them know I liked to go outside. The idea of being able to escape so easily was appealing. I don't understand, I said, as he led me to a bench, our bench, and let me sit facing the lights of the palace. He took a seat with his body facing the opposite direction, so that we were sort of turned in toward each other. It was an easy way to talk. He looked hesitant about sharing, but he took a breath and spoke.
Maybe I was just flattering myself, thinking I'd be worth some sort of risk. Not that I'd wish that on anyone, he clarified. I don't mean that. It just... I don't know. Don't you all see everything I'm risking?
No. You're here with your family to give you advice, and we all live around your schedule. Everything about your life stays the same, and ours changed overnight. What in the world could you possibly be risking?
Maxon looked shocked. America. I might have my family, but imagine how embarrassing it is to have your parents watch as you attempt to date for the first time. And not just your parents, the whole country. Worse than that, it's not even a normal style of dating. And living around my schedule? When I'm not with you all, I'm organizing troops, making laws, perfecting budgets, and all on my own these days, while my father watches me stumble in my own stupidity because I have none of his experience. And then, when I inevitably do things in a way he wouldn't, he goes and corrects my mistakes. And while I'm trying to do all this work, you, the girls I mean, are all I can think about. I'm excited and terrified by the lot of you.
He was using his hands more than I'd ever seen, whipping them in the air and running them through his hair.
And you think my life isn't changing? What do you think my chances might be of finding a soulmate in the group of you? I'll be lucky if I can just find someone who will be able to stand me for the rest of our lives. What if I've already sent her home, because I was relying on some sort of spark I didn't feel? What if she's waiting to leave me at the first sign of adversity? What if I don't find anyone at all? What do I do then, America? His speech had started out angered and impassioned, but by the end his questions weren't rhetorical anymore. He really wanted to know. What was he going to do if no one here was even close to being someone he could love? Though that didn't even seem to be his main concern. He was more worried that no one would love him. Actually, Maxon, I think you will find your soulmate here. Honestly.
Really?
His voice charged with hope at my prediction. Absolutely. I put a hand on his shoulder. He seemed to be comforted by that touch alone. I wondered how often people simply touched him. If your life is as upside down as you say it is, then she has to be here somewhere. In my experience, true love is usually the most inconvenient kind. I smiled weakly. He seemed happy to hear those words, and they consoled me as well, because I believed them, and if I couldn't have love of my own, the best I could do was help Maxon find it himself. I hope you and Marley hit it off. She's incredibly sweet. Maxon made a strange face.
She seems so.
What, is something wrong with sweet?
No, sweet is good.
He didn't elaborate. What do you keep looking for? He asked suddenly. What?
You can't seem to keep your eyes in one place. I can tell that you're paying attention, but you seem to be looking for something.
I realized he was right. All through his little speech, I'd scanned the garden and the windows, and even the towers along the walls. I was getting paranoid. People, cameras. I shook my head as I looked into the night.
We're alone. There's just the guard by the door.
Maxon pointed to the lone figure in the palace lamplight. He was right. No one had followed us out, and the windows were all lit up, but vacant. I'd seen that already through my scanning, but it helped to have it confirmed. I felt my posture relax a little.
You don't like people watching you, do you?
He asked. Not really. I prefer being below the radar. That's what I'm used to, you know? I traced the patterns carved into the perfect block of stone beneath me, not meeting his eyes.
You'll have to adjust to that. When you leave here, eyes will be on you for the rest of your life. My mom still talks to some of the women she was with when she went through the selection. They're all viewed as important women. Still.
Great, I moaned. Just one more thing I can't wait to go home to. Maxon's face was apologetic, but I had to look away. I was freshly reminded of how much this stupid competition was costing me, how my idea of normal was never coming back. It didn't seem fair. But I checked myself again. I shouldn't take it out on Maxon. He was as much a victim in this as the rest of us, though in a very different way. I sighed and looked back to him. I saw his face set as he decided something.
America, could I ask you something personal?
Maybe. I hedged. He gave me a humorless smile.
It's just, well, I can tell that you really don't like it here. You hate the rules and the competition, and the attention and the clothes and the, well, no, you like the food.
He smiled. I did too.
You miss your home and your family, and I suspect other people very, very much. Your feelings are incredibly close to the surface.
Yeah, I rolled my eyes. I know.
But you're willing to be homesick and miserable here instead of going home. Why?
I felt the lump rise in my throat, and I pushed it back down. I'm not miserable. And you know why.
Well, sometimes you seem okay. I see you smiling when you talk to some of the other girls, and you seem very content at meals, I'll give you that. But other times you just look so sad. Would you tell me why? The whole story?
It's just another failed love story. It's nothing big or exciting, trust me. Please don't push me. I don't want to cry.
For better or worse, I'd like to know one true love story besides my parents, one that was outside these walls and the rules and the structure. Please. The truth was, I'd carried the secret for so long I couldn't imagine putting it into words. And it hurt so much to think of Aspen. Could I even say his name out loud? I took a deep breath. Maxim was my friend now. He tried so hard to be nice to me, and he'd been so honest with me. In the world out there, I pointed past the vast walls. The castes take care of one another. Sometimes. Like my father has three families who buy at least one painting every year, and I have families that always pick me to sing at their Christmas parties. There are patrons, see? Well, we were sort of patrons to his family. They're sixes. When we could afford to have someone help clean, or if we needed help with the inventory, we always called his mother. I knew him when we were kids, but he was older than me, closer to my brother's age. They always played rough, so I avoided them. My older brother, Coda, he's an artist like my dad. A few years back, this one metal sculpture piece that he'd been working on for years sold for a massive amount of money. You may have heard of him. Maxon mouthed the words, Coda Singer. The seconds passed, and I saw the connection click in his brain. I brushed my hair off my shoulders and braced myself. We were really excited for Coda. He'd worked really hard on that piece, and we needed that money so badly at the time. The whole family was elated. But Coda kept almost all the money for himself. That one sculpture catapulted him. People started calling for his work every day. Now he has a waiting list a mile long and charges through the roof because he can. I think he might be a little addicted to the fame. Fives rarely get that kind of notice. Our eyes met in a very significant moment, and I thought again of how I was past ever going unnoticed again, whether I wanted to be or not. Anyway, after the calls started coming, Kota decided to detach himself from the family. My older sister had just gotten married, so we lost her income. Then Kota starts making real money, and he up and leaves us. I put my hands on Maxon's chest to emphasize my point. You don't do that. You don't just leave your family. Sticking together, it's the only way to survive. I saw the understanding in Maxon's eyes.
He kept it all for himself? Trying to buy his way up?
I nodded. He's got his heart set on being a two. If he was happy being a three or four, he could have bought that title and helped us. But he's obsessed. It's stupid, really. He lives more than comfortably, but it's that damn label he wants. He won't stop until he gets it. Maxon shook his head.
That could take a lifetime.
As long as he dies with a two on his gravestone, I guess he doesn't care.
I take it you're not close anymore.
I sighed. Not now. But at first I thought that I just misunderstood something. I thought Coda was moving out to be independent, not to separate himself from us. In the beginning I was on his side. When Coda got his apartment and studio set up, I went to help him, and he called the same family of sixes we always did, and their eldest son was available and eager, and worked with Coda a few days helping set things up. I paused, remembering. So there I was, just pulling things out of boxes, and there he was. Our eyes met, and he didn't seem so old or rough anymore. It had been a while since we'd seen each other, you know? We weren't kids anymore. The whole day I was there, we would accidentally touch each other as we moved things around. He would look at me, or smile, and I felt like I was really alive for the first time. I was crazy about him. My voice finally broke, and some of the tears I'd been longing to shed came out. We lived pretty close to each other, so I'd take walks during the day in case I might get to see him. Whenever his mother came by to help, sometimes he'd show up too. And we'd just watch each other. That's all we could do. I let out a tiny sob. He's a six, and I'm a five. And there are laws. And my mother. Oh, she would have been furious. No one could know.
I was moving my hands a little spastically, the stress of all the secret-keeping coming to the surface. Soon there were little anonymous notes left taped to my window, telling me I was beautiful, or that I sang like an angel. And I knew they were from him. The night of my 15th birthday, my mom threw a party, and his family was invited. He cornered me and gave me my birthday card and told me to read it when I was alone. When I finally got to it, it didn't have his name or even a happy birthday on the inside. It just said, "Treehouse. Midnight." Maxon's eyes widened.
"Midnight? But..."
"You should know that I break Ilya curfew regularly."
"You could have landed yourself in jail, America."
He shook his head. I shrugged. Back then, it seemed inconsequential. That first time, I felt like I was flying. Here he was, figuring out a way for us to be alone together. I just couldn't believe he wanted to be alone with me. That night, I waited up in my room and watched the treehouse in my backyard. Near midnight, I saw someone climb up. I remember I actually went to brush my teeth again, just in case. I crept out my window and up the tree, and he was there. I couldn't believe it. I don't remember how it started, but soon we were confessing how we felt about each other, and we couldn't stop laughing, because we were so happy the other one felt the same way. And I just couldn't be bothered to worry about breaking curfew or lying to my parents. And I didn't care that I was a 5 and he was a 6. I didn't worry about the future, because nothing could matter as much as him loving me. And he did, Maxon. He did. More tears. I clutched my chest, feeling Aspen's absence like I never had. Saying it out loud only made it more real. There was nothing to do but finish the story. We dated in secret for 2 years. We were happy, but he was always worried about us sneaking around and how he couldn't give me what he thought I deserved. When we got the notice about the selection, he insisted that I sign up. Maxon's mouth dropped open. I know. It was so stupid, but it would have hung over him forever if I didn't try. And I honestly, honestly thought that I would never get chosen. How could I? I raised my hands in the air and let them fall. I was still baffled by it all. I found out from his mom that he'd been saving up to marry some mystery girl. I was so excited. I made him a little surprise dinner, thinking I could coax the proposal out of him. I was so ready. But when he saw all the money that I'd spent on him, it upset him. He's very proud. He wanted to spoil me, not the other way around. And I guess he saw then that he'd never be able to. So he broke up with me instead. 1 week later, my name got called. I heard Maxon whisper something unintelligible. The last time I saw him was at my send-off. I choked. He was with another girl.
What?
Maxon shouted. I buried my head in my hands. The thing is, it drives me crazy, because I know other girls are after him. They always were. And now he has no reason to turn them down. Maybe he's even with the girl from my send-off, I don't know. And I can't do anything about it. But the thought of going home and watching it? I just can't, Maxon. I wept and wept, and Maxon didn't rush me. When the tears finally started to slow, I spoke. Maxon, I hope you find someone you can't live without. I really do. And I hope you never have to know what it's like to have to try and live without them. Maxon's face was a shallow echo of my own pain. He looked absolutely broken-hearted for me. More than that, he looked angry.
I'm sorry, America. I don't...
His face shifted a little.
Is this a good time to pat your shoulder?
His uncertainty made me smile. Yes. Now would be a great time. He seemed as skeptical as he'd been the other day, but instead of just patting my shoulder, he leaned in and tentatively wrapped his arms around me.
I only really ever hugged my mother. Is this okay? He asked. I laughed. It's hard to get a hug wrong. After a minute, I spoke again. I know what you mean, though. I don't really hug anyone besides my family. I felt so drained after the long day of dressing and the report and dinner and talking. It was nice to have Maxon just hold me, sometimes even patting my hair. He wasn't as lost as he seemed. He patiently waited for my breathing to slow, and when it did, he pulled back to look at me.
America, I promise you, I'll keep you here until the last possible moment. I understand that they want me to narrow the elite down to 3, and then choose. But I swear to you, I'll make it 2, and keep you here until then. I won't make you leave a moment before I have to, or the moment you're ready, whichever comes first. I nodded. I know we just met, but I think you're wonderful. And it bothers me to see you hurt. If you were here, I'd...
Maxon shook with frustration, then sighed.
I'm so sorry, America.
He pulled me back in, and I rested my head on his broad shoulder. I knew Maxon would keep his promises, so I settled in to perhaps the last place I ever thought I'd find genuine comfort. Chapter 16. When I woke the next morning, my eyelids felt heavy. As I rubbed the tiny ache out of them, I felt glad that I told Maxon everything. It seemed so funny that the palace, the beautiful cage, was the one place I could actually let myself be open about everything I'd been feeling. Maxon's promise settled in during the night, and I felt sure that I'd be safe here. This whole process of Maxon whittling down 35 women to 1 was going to take weeks, maybe months. Time and space were just what I needed. I couldn't be sure I'd ever get over Aspen. I'd heard my mom talk about your first love being the one that sticks with you. But maybe I'd be able to just feel normal sooner rather than later, with this time in between us. My maids didn't ask about my puffy eyes. They just made them less swollen. They didn't question my mess of hair. They just smoothed it. And I appreciated that. It wasn't like home where everyone saw that I was sad and didn't do anything about it. Here I could feel that they were all worried about me and whatever it was I was going through. In response, they handled me with extreme care. By mid-morning, I was ready to start my day. It was Saturday, so there was no routine or schedule, but it was the one day a week we were all required to stay in the women's room. The palace saw guests on Saturdays, and we had been warned that people might want to meet us. I wasn't too excited about it, but at least I got to wear my new jeans for the first time. Of course, they were the best-fitting pair of jeans I'd ever owned. I hoped that since Maxon and I were on such good terms, he'd let me keep them after I left. I went downstairs slowly, a little tired from a late night. Before I even got to the women's room, I heard the buzz of talking girls, and when I walked in, Marley grabbed me and pulled me toward 2 chairs in the back of the room.
"There you are. I've been waiting for you," she said.
"Sorry, Marley. I had a long night and slept in." She turned to look at me, probably noting the leftover sadness in my voice, but sweetly decided to focus on my jeans.
"Those look fantastic."
"I know. I've never felt anything like them." My voice lifted a bit. I decided to go back to my old rule. Aspen wasn't allowed here. I pushed him away and focused on my second favorite person in the palace.
"Sorry to keep you waiting. What did you want to talk about?"
Marley hesitated. She bit her lip as we sat down. There was no one else around. She must have a secret.
"Actually, now that I think of it, maybe I shouldn't tell you. Sometimes I forget that we're competing against each other."
Oh, she had secrets of the Maxon variety. This I had to hear.
"I know just how you feel, Marley. I think we could become really close friends. I can't bring myself to think of you as an enemy, you know?"
"Yeah, I think you're so sweet, and the people love you. I mean, you're probably going to win." She seemed a little defeated at the idea. I had to will myself not to wince or laugh at those words.
"Marley, can I tell you a secret?
My voice was full of gentle truth. I hoped she would believe my words.
Of course, America, anything.
I don't know who will win this whole